You mean I just have to blame it on me being me?
You might have
to. I've been absent-minded my whole life, so I guess I don't get to do that. All right. So programming logic is sequence where it goes 1, 2, 3, and I just drop down. And the important part of that is the drop-down idea, that when you're programming, you just drop down to the next instruction. Okay? Selection, where I make a decision, yes or no. Okay? And artificial intelligence is getting into maybes, but for us, we're sticking with yeses and nos. And then the loop structure, which is iteration, which means I keep doing it over and over and over again. But if I'm doing it over and over and over again, I got to have something that tells me when to get out. And that's the decision that tells me when to get out. Okay? So those are the three structures that I need to have when I'm doing programming. And I'm curious to see if that took all right. Yes, it did. Okay, because I had problems with it the first half taking last time. Okay, this is a loop where I am saying the loop here shows a test condition to see if processing should be done. So I am dropping down and I hit this condition. And it asks me some question to determine whether or not I should do the processing. Whatever the question is, it asks me, and I, depending on my answer, it does the processing, yes or no. Once it's done the processing, I code it so that it goes back and asks the condition again. And if the condition says process, it does the processing, goes back and checks. Now, it's possible the processing will never get done, okay? At the bottom it says, if the answer to the condition is no, the processing box is not executed. Well, if the answer is no the first time, if it comes in, asks the question, gets a no the first time, the processing will never be done. So it may not ever do the processing block. With this particular structure, because I'm asking the question and then making the determination of whether I want to process. Okay, on this next one, I am doing processing and then checking to see if I want to do it again. But in this one, I will always process at least once. And that should have been L, not T, but that's all right. So I will always process at least once, because I do the processing, then I check to see if I should do it again. If I get a yes, I loop back up and I do it again. If I get a yes again, I'll loop back up and do it again. So as long as I get a yes to the condition, I keep doing it. When I get a no to the condition, I'm out of there. Okay, so those are the two major styles that you code in. Either you process prior to doing the condition, or you process after it. So if I come down and look at this example, lots of times what we do is an initializing read if we're reading a file. And this one I'm reading a file. So I'm reading a file of data or a table. If a file is located inside a database, it's called a table. A file that is called a file is usually just a standalone collection of data that's not associated with anything in a database. So I'm doing an initializing read, which means I'm reading the first record. And then I say, as long as it's not in a file, in other words, as long as the read was successful. I do a read, but let's say I'm reading a disk file and there is nothing on that file. If there's nothing on the file, then it's end of file. Okay? So if the file is empty, it will be end of file and I'll stop. But as long as something was read, I process it, and again, I read again. And your book makes a big point about this. And I should have put on to read chapter 3, and I will put on to read chapter 3 now. We've read the first two. But your book makes a big point about the fact that if you have an initializing read, it reads the first record. Then you process, and then you read the next record. And you go back. And as long as that was not in a file, you process it and read the next record. And go back, and as long as it's not in a file, and the computer doesn't get bored. You know, it can do this a million times, and it will do it happily. If it has happiness. Okay, so anyway, the computer will do it happily a million times. So, in the pseudocode, I would write this as input or read a record, do while not in the file. That's my condition. Process, read again. Loop back. Do while not in the file. Process, read again. Loop back. And those are my standard loop structures. Okay. Questions? Okay, so on this one, I am looking at an example where I have a counter. Okay, so I'm setting up a counter, and I've got this counter in memory. Okay, so I've got a field, and I'm calling it counter. And I give it a start point. So maybe I give it a start point of 1. Okay. So I've got a counter, and I give it a start point. And then I also have a stop point. Okay, so my start point I should have put up here too. So I set my start point at 1, then I assign my start point to counter, and I set my stop point, let's say, to 5. Okay? And now I'm going to follow this logic. So I set my counter equal to the start point, and then I say, is counter less than the stop point? 1 is less than 5. Okay? So I process, and then I increment the counter. So it's now up to 2. And I go back. Is the counter less than the stop point? 2 is less than 5, so I process, and then I increment the counter. So it's now up to 3. Okay? And then I go back. Is the counter less than the stop point? Yes, it is. So I process. Whatever process does, I do something. It might be writing on the screen. It might be other things. Process, increment the counter, and go back. Is the counter less than the stop point? Yes. So I process, increment the counter, and then go back. Now is the counter less than the stop point? No. So I'm done. Okay, I'm done and I'm out. These are the key things here. whenever I'm doing a loop structure, I want to initialize the counter outside the loop to a particular start point. I want to test the counter to determine whether or not to enter the loop. And inside the loop, I need to make a change. Because if I never change the counter, then the counter will always stay at 1, the stop point will stay at 5, and I'll do this forever. Okay, so if I don't change the thing that is controlling, then I have a big problem. So what you do is you set up something to do the control. So when you're doing a loop, you have a control, okay? And the control is what controls when you get out. Now, the control might be a counter. It might be a total. When a total gets too big, I want to get out. But you have something, some kind of a control. And the first thing you have to do is to set the control. And you set that control prior to going into the loop. Okay? So prior to entering. Then the other thing you have to do is you have to check the control. And you determine what that check is going to be. I don't want my total to go over 1,000. I don't want my counter to go over 5. All my control can be end of file. Okay? I don't want to go past end of file. I just want to process the records. And then you need to do a change of the control inside the loop. You want to do a change of the control. You want to change it. And if you don't change it, then the same situation will apply and you'll be doing the loop forever and ever and ever. Okay? So you need to change the control. Now, if you're reading a file, the change is you read another record. And you keep reading another record, and finally when you read, you don't have any records to read. But the change is that inside the loop, you read another record. Okay? The check is, in a file, you're checking for end of file. So, wait a minute, what did I just do? I wanted it to insert a blank page. It did. I'm all set. Go away. So I come back here, and on this one, this is really kind of setting things because I get ready and I read. This is checking things, and this is changing things. Because when I read another record, I move on to the next record. So I am changing things. I set by reading the first record. I actually set probably by opening the file as much as anything. And then I read a record. I check to make sure it's not end of file. And inside the record, I change by reading. In this one, I set. Why have I got that? Come on. I set it here. I check it here. And I change it here. Okay? So I am doing the three things. I set the counter. I check the counter. And I change the counter. Okay, this is the kind where I want to process before I go in. On the previous one, if the counter started out greater than the stop point, so counter started out at 6 and stop point was 5, would I ever process? No. So I may never process. When I come down to this one, I start the counter, and then I process, and then I increment, and then I check. So on this one, I will always process at least once. So on this one, if my start point is 1 and my counter is 1 and my stop point, and my stop point is 1, it's 5 rather. So I'm setting the counter equal to the start point, and then I process whatever I do. I may write a line on the screen, I may do a calculation, I do something. And then after I process, I increment the counter. And then I check, is the counter not equal to the start point? On this one, I'm looking for equality. And if it's not equal, I go back and I process again. Then I increment the counter and I check. If it's not equal to the stop point, I go back, I process again, I increment, and I check. Is it not equal? It's not equal. So I go back, I process, I increment, I check, and it's now equal. And so I get a no and I drop out and do whatever it is that I want to do next. Okay. So as a programmer, I can choose one of these two methodologies and write my code so that it meets one of those methods. Okay. Questions? The logic PowerPoint assignment that I'm giving you, I want to take a look at that. Come on. Thank you. Okay, so I've got a bunch of trees. It's spring. So I have a bunch of trees. Okay? And for each tree, I've got an item number, an item name, on hand, on order, the reorder point, cost, price, and the vendor number that I'm dealing with. Okay. So I come in here and I say, okay, the first thing I want to do is I want to produce a report using the logic show. And the report should contain the item number, the item name, the price, the cost, and the profit. Profit is the difference between price and cost. Okay, so profit is the difference between price and cost. So I come in here, and I'm going to have a report that I can put on the screen, or I could put on paper, it's up to me. I come in and I do an initializing read. So I read this first record. Okay, so I read that first record, and that first record has moved into memory where I have access to all of the data that's on the record. and I check and make sure that it wasn't interfiled, and in other words, that my read was successful. If it was, I calculate the profit. Well, in this case, the profit is $20.89. Okay, so I calculate the profit. And that's going to go into a work area that I set up in memory. So when I am doing this problem, I will set up a variable. I will set up a variable in memory, and I will give that variable the name profit. Okay, so it's profit. So profit now has 29. So now I set up the line for the report, and I really didn't aim to do that, but that's just basically getting the line ready to write. And then I'm saying, now write the line. So I am writing what I said to write, which was the item number, which is 1111, oak. And then I wanted price, which is 75. I wanted cost, which is 95.89. And I wanted profit, which is 20.89. Okay. So I'm writing those out. Then the next thing says, read a record. So I drop down and I read this record. Okay, so I'm reading the second record now. That's now moved into memory, replacing the first record. So that's the record that is now in memory. I calculate the profit, and the profit on that one is $17.99. So that's now in my variable in memory, okay, because I did the subtraction and assigned it to profit. So I said profit equals price minus cost, okay? So I assigned it to profit. Now I set up and I write the line. And the line is going to be 1212, red maple, etc., going across. And then $17.99. And then after that, I read the next record. So I read sugar maple, and I go through and I process that record. So I've now got sugar maple, and I write a line out for sugar maple. Okay? When I finally read and processed elm, and I go to read again, there's nothing there. So that means it is in the file, and I stop. Okay? So this is a basic kind of programming logic that we can go through and play computer. What we're doing here is playing computer and producing the results that the computer would produce. So if I go on to number two, or example problem number two, is there any difference between this one and the one that I just did?
No.
No. Okay. The difference is that I pulled this out into a module, subroutine, procedure, and as I said, there's a whole load of things it could be called. So I'm going up, processing it. When I'm done, I come back and continue on. Okay, so I go out, process it. When I'm done, I come back and continue on and go and check for not in the file again. Again, the important thing is that I have the initializing read over here. And this reads record 2 on. Okay, this reads record 2 to the end. And it is the thing that does the change. Because I read a record and that changes something because I now have a new record. So I've made a change. I've told the story about when I was learning to program, I did something like this, only I left out the read. And I had the pile of paper that big that somebody came back and said, did you really want to write the same name, person's name on all of these pieces of paper? And the answer is obviously no, I didn't want to write the same person's name on all those pieces of paper. But I had forgotten to write in here, read a record. So it had just processed on the same record. Since it never read a record, it never hit end of file, and it just kept going. And if it hadn't run out of paper, then it would probably still be going, okay? But it ran out of paper. Okay, looking at the next one, what would be the output on this? Do this one. And since you're passing in this assignment, make a picture of it or whatever, copy and paste, I don't care. Let's do number 3. And you have actually sent it in, but I think you're the only one that's still there. So you can check and see if you're right now. First of all, look at the requirements. The output should show item number, item name on hand and on order. So when I write, when I set up the line and write it, those are the 4 fields that I want to see.
Yeah,
it's, well, it's not copy. I only want 4 fields on the output.
Sure.
So you couldn't, huh?
You're kidding me.
No, 4 fields, 4 fields for each record. How many records am I going to want? Huh? I'm always cold, so that. Right. I'm only going to want to print the records with the on hand is greater than 25. So am I printing oak?
No.
Thank you. How many records am I printing? Or displayed?
Five.
Four.
How many?
Four.
Okay, it's going to be four records. Because 25 is not greater than 25. So you who said five probably had 25 in there. And that's not greater than 25.
If it had an equal sign, it would be greater than.
And who's equal or greater than? So I come in here and I read a record. And I read oak. Okay? It's not in a file, so I come over here to process. And in process, I ask the question, is on hand greater than 25? I get a no, which means I come down here and I do nothing. And then I drop out and read another record. So the second record is being read. Okay, so I'm dropping out and I'm reading another record, and the second record is being read. That's not in the file, so I go up to process. Is on hand greater than 25? Yes, it is. So I set up the line and write it. And the four things that I want you to write are the 1212, the red maple, the 26, and the 22. So those are the four things that I want you to write. And then at that point, you drop down, because you came through here, and you read another record. So I'm now reading the third record. Okay. Questions? So basically, that's what you need to do for this particular assignment. Some of the examples are done in flowcharts at the end. Some of the examples are done in pseudocode. So I get down to starting to look at pseudocode. Okay? If you don't like pseudocode, turn it into a flowchart and then figure it out. But I get down and I'm doing pseudocode. So, for example, this one was a flowchart, this one was pseudocode. Okay. So, that is your assignment. Your test, this is a quiz, but it's really treated like a test, which means, really, that it only counts as a full homework assignment. Quizzes don't even count as much as a homework assignment, okay? Because there's 10 questions. So what I did here is, number one, I got a new toy when I did this. And I was not terribly confident with the new toy. So my flowcharts are a little shaky here. But anyway, what I want you to do is, I said, this quiz is going to give you a flowchart for a condition and ask you to answer questions about it. So problem one says, assume the following. One will be put in memory for count. So I've got count, and I just put one in it. A will be put in memory for the variable code. So I have A here. 25 will be put in memory for the variable cost. So I have 25 here. The following the logic and the flowchart, what will be in the memory variable count when you're done?
Zero.
So I'm asking the question, is code equal to A? Yes, it is, right? So code is equal to A. And then I'm asking the question, is cost greater than 50?
No.
So I'm taking the no branch. And then I'm saying, okay, count is equal to count minus 1. So I'm subtracting 1 from count, and it's 0. So 0 is the answer to the first one. okay? It's going to be zero. Because after following the logic and the flow chart, what will be in the memory variable count? And what will be in count will be a zero. Now, the first five, I actually build on them. If you make a mistake somewhere along the line, as long as the next one is consistent with the mistake you made, it's okay. So, in other words, I won't take off, you know, all the points. But you continue doing those. Okay. As you go down, I put a flowchart and then I ask several things. In the next section, I want you to tell me what pseudocode actually accurately portrays the logic. So I'm looking at, does this pseudocode right here go with that logic? Okay, so the pseudocode says if code equals A. Well, that's the first thing it asks up there, so that's okay so far. The next thing it does is if I get a yes to code A, it asks is code greater than 50. Okay? And if code is greater than 50, it takes count and adds one to it. So far it looks like it's okay. Else, that would mean I take the no branch, right? Else I say, does count equal count minus 1? And that's okay. Then I have an end if, which ends that if. And then I have another end if that ends that if. So, does that pseudocode work?
Yeah.
Look at the flowchart again. No. Why?
There's a second else
in the same one for the That's right. We just went through the whole thing, but what about that poor guy? Okay? It never showed up in the pseudocode. Okay? So that one never showed up in the pseudocode. So it was fine, except that it was missing something. Okay? And where would that something go?
After if code equals A. Next line?
No.
After
and if. So in right there is where you would be putting else count equals count minus 1. So you'd be throwing the else in there. So you say if code equals A, if you take the yes branch, this is all part of the yes to the code equals A. The else is part of the no, code does not equal A. So if code equals A, else, do that, and then end that if. Because right now, if code equals A, I just drop out.
Why isn't there something saying where you should put, where you should calculate the count minus 1 before you go to the end if? Because if you go that route, don't you have to do that?
You're confusing me.
Sure. Okay, so if you go nil from the beginning, so instead of going to the cost is greater than 50, you go to the count equals count minus 1. Why doesn't that show up in the pseudocode somewhere?
Because I did it wrong, but I just fixed it.
It was a trick question,
basically. Right. I mean, my question here was, does the pseudocode accurately reflect the logic? And the answer is no. And the reason it's no, and I didn't even ask you for the reason, but for the reason it's no is that this is missing. That is not in the pseudocode. So that is missing, so that's why it's a no.
I missed that. That's a problem.
Yeah. Okay. What about the next one, problem 7? Does problem 7 go with that flowchart?
Yes.
What do you think? Does it go with it, or yes or no?
Yes.
How many vote for yes, and how many vote for no? Okay, and how many don't vote? Explain to me why it works.
Because if you get a no for A, it goes straight to count minus 1. But if you get a yes for A and a no for 50, you get count minus 1. But if you get a yes and a yes, you get count plus 1. So you're all set.
Did
anybody follow him? Because I didn't, but that's okay. You got the right answer. I just didn't follow you. Okay. So anyway, what about... Okay, so you're right. If code is A and cost is greater than 50, do this. Else, do this. Because if I get a no to either one of them, and I didn't say very well either, if I get a no to either one of them, it's count minus 1. Now, what about if I change this one to say count plus 2? Could I do it now? No, because my no's are different. And so I wouldn't know clearly what to put down there in the else. So the no's would be different. So this would not work if I change that to a plus 2. As long as I have it the way it is, then it works. Okay, so this one works. Because the no's do the same thing. But if I'm doing a compound, I've got to have this and this result in this. If I get a no to either one of them, it results in the same thing. So if I'm doing a compound, I need to have the no's the same. Okay. Questions? Okay, so this one goes with the last flowchart, so we'll finish this one off. Is this one okay? Can you?
Yes.
Yes, because it adds in the things that I told you you had to add in back on number 6. It is added in the else and the count equals count minus 1. So those are the things I told you that was missing when we looked at number 6. And I've now fixed them. I fixed it. And so it's all right now. Okay. Okay. That does those two things. Okay, we're going to take a quick start to look at doing a little bit of programming. And so I'm going to go to programs, and I'm going to go to JavaScript, and I'm going to go to hello.html. So go to programs, go to JavaScript, and bring up the one that says hello.html. So now we're going to start applying logic, but not really. We probably won't actually start applying much logic for about a week. So notice the output that this one generated. I have got hello world twice. Once in the top corner up there, and once here. And my screen, because I'm in Firefox, went dark. They decided that was a neat way of doing it. If you're in another browser, I don't know if you still got a white screen or whether it went to dark gray or not. Okay. In doing these, do not use Explorer. Because Explorer has a real thing about pop-ups. Not unjustifiably. You should have a real thing about pop-ups. But the problem is that they will give you a lot of grief if you try to do pop-ups. And we're just kind of playing with programming at the beginning. And pop-ups are an easy way to get information out. And so we're going to do pop-ups. Not a great way to do once you're doing this professionally, but among other things, they're annoying. But we're going to be using them. So I would not use Explorer. Okay, so I've got two Hello Worlds. And if I click on OK, it goes back to being white and the pop-up goes away. Okay. Now, to see the code that makes this, I do view page source. Okay. So to see the code that makes this, and I've got to paste that in. I do view page source. So I right click and I do view page source, and that gives me the source. Now, I have to pull it down and decrease the size if I want to be able to see both of them. Okay, so if I want to see my output and my code, I have to click on it and bring it down and reduce the code, and it says view source. It used to make life a lot easier, but they basically have decided that 90% of their user base doesn't care about this, so they're going to do the thing for the person that's doing a search. Okay, so let's look at that again, what I just said. You're going to bring this up, you're going to right-click on it, and say View Page Source. And now you've got the two windows open, you want to see them simultaneously, so I'm dragging this down and reducing its size. And now I can see them both simultaneously. And if I want to make this bigger, Control Plus makes it bigger so that you can see a little bit better. JavaScript is embedded within HTML. It can be embedded within other things as well. But it is designed for use with the web. And the web is designed for HTML, so it is embedded within HTML. I could have all of the things that we did with HTML at the beginning included in here, and JavaScript as well. But for now, I'm focusing on JavaScript, so I'm not going to do the other nice things that we did with HTML. We will eventually look at them, but I want to just focus on JavaScript. So, I have my HTML tag, and then I have a script tag that I open and close. After the script tag, you write type equals text slash JavaScript, which tells the browser that you are now using JavaScript. Okay? And all of today's browsers support JavaScript, so you're fine. It comes with your browser. So I put in there script type equals text JavaScript to tell it that I'm using JavaScript. Then to write on the screen, I can use a document write. There are other more sophisticated ways of doing this, but again, we're only doing an introductory level, and so document write is a beautiful thing. So I say document.write. Which means write on the document. And the document is the part of the page that you have control over from the top to the bottom. It is the part that things show up in when you do a search. It's the part that you own, basically. So I'm saying document right, and I want to write a literal. And so I enclose it in quotes. The document right has parentheses after it. So I have document right. And it has parentheses after it. And I put what I want to write inside those parentheses. And I want to write the literal hello world. So it is within quotes. Notice there's also a semicolon at the end. I end my lines of JavaScript with a semicolon. Okay. And then the next line got me the pop-up. It said alert. And an alert has parentheses after it as well. And I put inside the parentheses what I want to say in the pop-up. So that generated the pop-up. Okay? Questions? Okay. Why do I keep going out? The next one is multiply. So I'm saying here, enter the first number, and I'm putting in 44. Enter the next number, I'll put in 7. And I get an answer of 28. 4 times 7 is 28. I'm doing a view page source, and that view page source is showing me the code. So this time I set up a bunch of variables, and that's basically a housekeeping part of the program. The initializing part of the program is I set up a bunch of variables. And in JavaScript, the way you set up a variable is you use the word VAR to stand for variable. So I said variable answer equals 0. So that means it sets up an area in memory called answer and gives it a value of 0. Then I said, okay, I'll set up another variable called firstNum and give it a value of 0. And I will set up another one. I set up another one called secondNum and give it a value of 0. Okay, so these are housekeeping or initializing. They're getting ready to write to do the program. So I set those all up. Now, some languages require that you not only give things a value, but you tell what type of data it is. Is it a number or is it character data? In this one, you don't. You don't tell it the type. Okay? Remember back in Access, when you were setting up a table, you told it type. Okay? You picked short text or number or something like that. And in some programming languages, you do that. We'll look at Visual Basic later when you do it in that. But here, you don't have to tell it the type. It figures it out. And that can be problematic at times, as we'll see. Now you've got a pop-up here to take in data, and it's called a prompt. Okay? So that's a prompt, and I should have made this bigger. But hopefully you've got it on your screen. So I'm putting up a prompt, and I'm putting up the prompt that says, enter the first number. So that's what the box said when it came up. And then I gave it a 0 here, which means inside the box you saw a 0, and we'll look at that in just a second. Then I put up a second prompt to take in the second number. Okay, so when I did this, that first prompt came up and I entered a 4. And the second prompt came up and I entered a 7. Okay? So now I'm seeing answer equals first num times second number. And so I do the math and I put 28 inside answer. And then I say document write answer. And answer came up on the screen as 28. Okay.
Could you make it so the prompt, the boxes didn't have 0 in it?
By not putting the 0 there, I can put full quote.
Okay.
Okay, so there it is, a little bit bigger. So I'm taking and saying prompt enter. Now notice the words that I want are inside quotes. And then there's a comma and there's the initial value. Okay. All of these lines end with a semicolon. So, again, if I take and I run this, do a refresh, and run it, notice it says enter the first number, and notice the 0 in the box. Okay? So now I'm going to put in 2.5 and say okay. And then I'm going to put in 4. And say okay, and it comes back with the answer of 10. Okay, so it comes back with the answer of 10. Okay, the third one, and then I'm... So let's go look at the third one. The third one does exactly the same thing, so I'm putting in the 4 and the 7 and getting the 28. View page source. The only difference here is that I have the document write made up of a literal, which says the answer is, and it's inside quotes. So I'm writing the answer is, and you can see it up there. And answer, which is a variable. And in between, I have a comma, which is a separator. Is that how you spell separator? Separ. I told you.
Yeah.
Nah, there's got an extra E out there. Anyway, I flunked fifth grade spelling, and as I said, I've never improved. So, document write, literal, comma, variable. And I'm writing it both out. Now, I have a space inside the quotes after the S because when I write it out, I wanted to have a space before the 28 and I did not want them writing right next to each other, so I included the space inside my literal. Okay. Okay, so what I've done so far is I would use Notepad or Notepad++. So I have open Notepad or Notepad++, and I write my page. And I'm cheating, I'm copying and pasting. But let's pretend I wrote my page. Then I do a file save as, wait a minute, file, save as, and I'm going to put it out on my E drive, and I'm going to call it first spring 17 dot HTML. And I'm changing the save as type to all files. So I am saving it as an HTML file. Okay? So I am saying save as, and I am saving it as an HTML file, and I think I do not have... Did I do the save? Life is acting very strange right now. But I think I saved it. Let's see if I managed to get a picture of that. No, I didn't. So I will save it again. File, save as, and again I'm writing .html, and I am writing all files, and I am saying save. You want to replace it? Sure. Except that I forgot to take a picture. Oh well, I'll do that in a minute. So, now I have the program, and I saved it in Notepad. So now I go to my browser, and I'm going to say up here at the top, and I don't quite know why everything is jumping around, but it certainly is not happy. I'm going to go up here, and I'm going to open it. So I'm going to go Control-O, which brings up the things that I have. Okay, so I hit Control-O, which brings up the things that I have. And then I am picking over here my E drive, because that's where I put it. And I am going down and finding first S17. And if you look over at the side, you'll see it says HTML document. At home, I have things set so extensions show. Here, they don't have it set that way. So, but if you look over here, you can see that it's an HTML document. Okay? So I'm going to now click on first S17.html, and it comes up. Okay, so I am now testing it, and I got the right answer. Now, if I don't like my answer, the answer is, etc. Let's say I decided that I would rather have that say my. So I'm going to say my answer is, I'm going to do a file save, and then I'm going to come over here and do a refresh. And it now says my answer is. So when I'm doing this, I keep my browser open. I keep Notepad open. I make my change. I go and run it. And I go back and forth between the two, testing and running. Okay, we have 11 minutes left. I want you to write a simple HTML comparable to what I've got here, or copy and paste if I'm not looking, and write it in Notepad and bring it up and open it in the browser. So go ahead and copy and paste if you want to, but maybe change something. If you're having problems, Eric and I are here. And for some reason, it really doesn't like... I write the statement, just to hang it up. Let's see if that saves better.